This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Gather round, because it's time to do one of my favorite things in the world, which is get really nerdy with some fantasy baseball. Hello and welcome back to the Extra Bases Podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from orangebloods.com. This is episode 37 of the Extra Bases Podcast, and it's going to be a different edition of the Extra Bases Podcast than most of you loyal listeners, all 30 of you. Hopefully there's more than 30 of you, but for y'all that have stuck with it from the beginning or picked it up in the middle or whenever you joined, this is going to be a little different than normal Extra Bases Podcast, because usually it's all about Texas baseball or pro baseball and contracts or something like that. It's going to be all fantasy baseball. All fantasy baseball from start to end. If that's not your thing, I understand. You got an opportunity to shut this thing down and go back to the Yak and find another podcast to entertain you. But if fantasy baseball is your thing, hopefully you saw the title, hopefully it appealed to you. Cool, because it's a big passion of mine. I've been playing fantasy baseball, I guess competitively is the right word to say it. I mean, just with the intent to win, and obviously the money aspect comes into it. I think I've been playing fantasy baseball for money since high school, but I actually started playing in middle school. It was 1998. It was the year Luis Gonzalez went nuts in the second half of the year in my head-to-head team that I drafted at midseason. So the way ESPN used to do it was, you could draft a team at the beginning of the season or in the middle of the year. They'd be like, hey, you know, if you want a second try at drafting the fantasy baseball team, you can do a midseason draft. And I did a midseason draft, and I ended up finishing like number 12 overall in all of the rankings in fantasy baseball for the midseason team. So that really got me hooked early on. Man, fantasy baseball has changed so much since then. But I've been playing competitively, passionately for a long, long time. It's borderline obsession for me. So I hope I'm able to deliver some good knowledge, some tips. We're about, 13, 14 games into the 162 game regular season for Major League Baseball. It's not too early to notice some trends, whether they're good, bad, indifferent, whatever, whether there's players you can go make a move for that are maybe starting slow, but it looks like they're going to pick things up. Or maybe there's some guys that have started really, really well, but they're not going to sustain it. Maybe you sell those guys. Maybe you've had some injuries. You know, the Mike Clevenger injury was a big bummer. I had him on a team. I mean, I was watching that game, and he threw 5 shutout innings and had 10 strikeouts, and he got pulled, and I'm thinking, what the hell's going on? Was he on a pitch count? I mean, this is a guy that threw 200 innings last year. So that was a big bummer. You know, Giancarlo Stanton, who I have on the team, hopefully he gets back in the lineup soon. So we are already dealing with some injury issues, which is going to happen. David Dahl, the Colorado Rockies outfielder, got hurt again. Oh, man, and I aggressively went after him in every draft that I could. I think I have him on at least 2 teams, and he was mashing the ball as he normally does, especially at Coors Field, and then he got hurt again as he normally does. So a lot of injury stuff out there, but that has probably sent you to the waiver wire already, which I don't think is the worst thing in the world. Obviously, you need some good injury luck, especially with some of those top-round picks on your team, to have a chance to win a championship, win your league. If you're playing in things like NFBC, potentially compete for an overall title, which is big, big money. So you do need some positive injury luck. But if you're getting into, you know, some of those guys you've taken in the later rounds, and either they're just not cutting or they're injured or whatever, going to the waiver wire is not the worst thing in the world. I actually think that in deeper leagues, you know, kind of having your hand forced to go to the waiver wire and just be aggressive with making a move on a guy that could turn into something can sometimes result in finding a real hidden gem. So we'll talk about that some as well. But I just wanted to start with just some kind of early season pointers that I try to live by, and that are things that you can carry throughout the season as well. And the first one is, like I said, just be aggressive. If you think that there's a guy that's got breakout chance, or, you know, something about the numbers says that this guy is legit, or maybe it's a young player that's in a everyday role for a change, or whatever it is, I be aggressive. That's really, to me, the difference between winning and losing leagues in fantasy baseball, because you're hardly ever going to have a full season with a full roster where you just don't have injuries at some point. I mean, it's 162 games. There's going to be times where your ace starting pitcher probably has to skip a start, or is on the 10-day DL for something like that, or, you know, your big hitter is tweaks an ankle or tweaks the biceps in the case of Giancarlo Stanton recently. So you're probably not going to have a perfect injury luck throughout the season, which is why if you watched a guy or read something or you look at some numbers and you say, man, this guy could end up being a really good player, be aggressive. That's oftentimes the difference between winning and losing leagues. For example, Yandy Diaz, the infielder for the Tampa Bay Rays, I think he's mostly first base, third base eligibility in most leagues. He was the guy that the Rays traded Jake Bowers for. And Jake Bowers was a pretty heralded prospect, probably like around 50th overall on the prospect list last season. Then he made his debut for the Rays, had a really strong start, kind of faded off. But a toolsy guy, runs really fast. He's got some pop. People believe that he's going to hit eventually. Well, the Rays traded him, and it kind of raised some eyebrows when they got back a guy named Yandy Diaz who could hit the ball but never really hit the ball with any sort of power. Well, he continues to hit the ball really, really, really hard, and he's starting to lift the ball as well. And I made a move on him week one waiver wire, especially in my NFBC league. I went super aggressive and used a pretty hefty amount of my FAAB fab budget for the waiver wire and free agency and stuff like that. And I mean, hopefully I'm right. You know, so far so good. He's continued to hammer the ball. He gets on base at a pretty good rate. I think the Rays are going to be way better than people think they are. And he's been hitting at the top of the lineup some. So that's just kind of an example. There are players out there, especially early in the season, that are everyday guys for the first time, maybe, or maybe they're stepping into everyday roles now because somebody got hurt. I think if you go look in Arizona with the Steven Souza injury, their starting center fielder got hurt right before the season began. He's out for the year. They're going to have to find some guys to pick up the slack. And Christian Walker is a guy that's kind of teased at a breakout all the time. He absolutely hammers the ball. He strikes out too much, but he hammers the ball. So and those are kinds of guys you can take chances on the waiver wire, and maybe you strike gold. And if not, maybe it's just a decent player that can help you a little bit, or, you know, maybe you just toss him back to the waiver wire and go take a chance on somebody else. So it definitely doesn't hurt to be aggressive. I mean, if you really find gold, you know, take Max Muncy last year, for example, a guy that really had never proved anything in his career. Well, in the offseason, he got into the best shape of his life. He started lifting the ball and launch angle and all those things, and all of a sudden, this guy's one of the best power hitters in Major League Baseball. And if you grabbed him early on, chances are it really improved your team. So there's a lot of gold to be found out there, especially right now. And when you're looking at these guys, or when you're just making decisions in general, just always check the data to just reinforce what you think, you know, what the numbers say, those sorts of things. I like going to Baseball Savant, which is MLB's really, really nerdy statistical page. It gives you all the exit velocity, launch angle, expected stats for pitchers and hitters. So you can really go see. He's like, hey, you know, this guy is hitting, and he was hitting 300. He's driving the ball out of the yard. Is this for real? You can go look at the statistics, and it'll point you in the right direction. Yeah, this is real. Or no, this is kind of fluky. It's not going to keep up. And you can look at pitcher usage and things like that. Like, hey, maybe a guy, and we'll talk about some of these guys specifically. Maybe this guy's throwing a lot more breaking balls for a change. You know, when Gerrit Cole got traded to the Astros, I remember writing a story. And I actually posted this for free on my Medium page because I was so passionate about it and convinced that this was going to happen. And sure enough, he went from an organization that was fastball, two-seamer, tries to sink it, whatever, to an organization that's like, what, if your breaking ball is the best pitch, we're going to throw your breaking ball all the time. We don't care if you throw 100 miles an hour. And that's what happened with Gerrit Cole. And then he nearly won the Cy Young Award, and now he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. So go check the data just to see, you know, to maybe, you know, Kendry, I remember when Kendry Morales went on his big late season run last year, just hammering the ball out of the yard. He was hitting the ball hard all the time. He was just having bad luck. And all the numbers, all the expected numbers said, hey, this guy should be hitting 75 points higher and his slugging percentage should be something like 100 points higher. And it's like, whoa, okay. eventually he's going to get some positive luck. So go look at the data and see if you can find anything that, you know, maybe sticks out or just reinforces what you're thinking as well. And like I said, it's never too early to take a chance, especially with pitching. Pitching gets snatched up so often now. Everybody's just kind of in search of the next big thing, and rightfully so. I mean, just go back to last year, guys like Shane Bieber and things like that, Walker Buehler. It's not always the top prospects, too. Sometimes these prospect guys slip through the cracks, or not necessarily slip through the cracks, but they're undervalued because these people that are making prospect lists are not professional scouts. They're not seeing these guys every single time. They're talking to some scouts, but you know, Chris Paddock's a good example of that. Chris Paddock was I mean, I don't even know if he was on many top 100 prospects lists last year at this time. And then at the end of the season, he made his way into like the top 40 or top 50 or whatever. Now he's arguably like one of the top, what, 2-3 young starting pitchers in Major League Baseball. So go look at the minor league statistics as well, and just never be afraid to take a chance early on. An opportunity matters a lot. You've got to find guys that have an opportunity to play every day or close to every day. I mean, that matters. A guy that's, you know, in the lineup 3 times out of 7 games during the week is not going to help you, you know, unless he's just Babe Ruth in those 3 games. So opportunity matters a lot, especially you get these guys that are filling in for injured players or you know, maybe they had an opportunity out of spring training to crack the rotation and they've really seized that opportunity. Max Fried with the Braves is a good example of that. So just some tips there. I mean, it's early on. I really encourage all you fantasy baseball players to be aggressive on the waiver wire. Again, you're listening to the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. This is episode 37, and I wanted to go through some rapid fire here with some guys that I've got labeled in the bad group, the good group, and the interesting group. And excuse the clicking a little bit in the background. I wanted to make sure that I had some things up. I fell for Nick Pivetta. I admit it. I fell for it. You look at his peripheral stats, and those are things like, you know, how you have your basic stats like ERA. Then you go look at things like FIP and XFIP, those advanced metrics that really represent what the pitcher controls. It kind of eliminates the defense from the equation. And, you know, what does a pitcher control? Strikeouts, walks, those types of things. So Pivetta, all the advanced numbers said last year, this guy is just way better than his ERA. You know, it should be a high 3, mid 3 ERA. He's striking out a bunch of guys. And I fell for it. I'm sometimes too much of a sucker for numbers. Well, among the 71 pitchers this year in Major League Baseball that have faced at least 50 plate appearances. So they face 50 batters, basically, no matter what happens in the count. And if you go by the quality of contact, the weighted on-base percentage quality of contact, so XWOBA, this is all a baseball savant. Basically, what should the on-base percentage be based on the amount of the type of contact the pitcher gives up, and just like the amount of times a player gets on base? Like, if he's giving up hard contact all the time and yet some of these guys are getting on base, well, that's going to factor into the equation. So basically, the higher the number, the worse. You if you're a pitcher, you want your opposing players to have a low expected weighted on-base average. Basically, on-base percentage that's kind of nerded up to be even more accurate than just your basic on-base percentage. Out of those 71 pitchers, Nick Pivetta is 70th. That's awful. People are hammering the ball off of him. He plays in a park that the ball can fly out of. It's one of the reasons why I liked Bryce Harper so much before the season, because he was taking that left-handed power to Citizens Bank Park for 81 games out of the year. So Nick Pivetta, I'm totally off the train, and I actually watched him his last start because I have him on a dynasty team. He was a cheap keeper for me. I took a chance on him because he was on everybody's breakout list, and you look at the FIP and everything, it's like, okay, you know, this guy could be a high 3 ERA guy that strikes out a bunch of people, but his presence on the mound wasn't that good. He kept, like, stepping off over and over and over again, just didn't pitch with any confidence, didn't have enough command. I mean, he throws at 96, 97, 98. You know, I'm trying to think what his average fastball velocity was. We'll take a look at it. Has a really good curveball. I mean, the curveball spin rate is outstanding. It's one of the better ones in baseball. So his average fastball velocity this year has been 94 miles an hour, and he could get it up really, really high as well. The problem is people are slugging 844 against that fastball. So if you've got Nick Pivetta and you're in a 10-team league, absolutely drop him. If you're in a 12-team league, it's a little bit of a tougher call. I personally am going to cut him loose from every 12-team league team that I have. He's really, really frustrating because he's like a golf, you know, when you play golf and you're not very good, but you hit one really, really good shot and it keeps you playing. He's going to have a start this year at some point where he's going to go like six innings and strike out 11 guys and only give up a run. And you're thinking, okay, he's got it. No, don't buy it. Don't fall for it like I did. Another guy that is an interesting case is Corey Kluber, because from all the reports this offseason, the Indians tried to trade him. And I don't think it was because they thought he was going to be suddenly a bad pitcher, but it was because that their models internally said that his decline was going to start happening. He's 32 years old, and just when you get to a certain age and you know, certain amount of innings you've thrown and you know, velocity and break and all these things, their models basically must have said that, hey, we need to try to get the bang out of the buck for this guy because the decline is going to start coming. Well, it looks like the Indians were right. He has not started the year very well. He used to be a guy that gets a lot of ground balls. I mean, his launch angle against the last four seasons before this was basically 11.2 degrees or lower. This year, it's 17.9 degrees. The expected slugging on balls hit against him is 483. His hard hit rate given up is up almost 10%. His K rate is down. These are not good numbers. The thing that's going to work in Kluber's favor is that he's in the AL Central, which is an abysmal division. The Tigers can't hit. The Royals can't really hit. They can steal bases, but they can't really hit. You know, and unfortunately for Kluber, he doesn't get to face his own lineup because the Indians have been wretched so far. The Twins have actually been pretty good offensively. They banged around Jacob DeGrom recently, but the AL Central is just filled with not good offenses. The White Sox, obviously. So that's going to make Corey Kluber definitely usable. But if, you know, if he has a really, really good start, I mean, he had a good start recently, and you get a trade offer for him or you think you can send something out there, I would encourage you to do that because the batted ball data and things like that are basically confirming why the Indians wanted to trade him, because they felt like a decline was going to start coming. Not fall off the cliff decline, but not the Cy Young caliber pitcher that we're used to seeing. And another guy that kind of falls into that group as well is Zach Greinke. The velocity thing with him has been well documented. It's not what it used to be. I need to see what it is actually right now. And he's a really, really good pitcher, like, you know, sequencing, commanding, all of those things. Yeah, his average fastball velocity right now on his four-seamer is 89.1 miles per hour. It's tough in this era of baseball now with the way guys mash fastballs. It's tough to beat guys with just that type of velocity. I don't care what kind of spin you have. I don't care what kind of spin efficiency you have. It's tough. It's tough to live life at 89 miles an hour all the time, especially when you're having to face lineups, sometimes three, maybe even in the case of a guy like Greinke, four times through the order. So he's another one of those guys. If you look at the way, the expected weighted on base, which is what we were talking about with Nick Pivetta when he ranked 70th among 71 pitchers that have faced 50 batters this year. Basically, your starting pitchers, because I don't think any relievers have faced 50 batters yet. Pivetta ranks 70th. Greinke ranks 59th. That's not a good place to be. And there's actually some pretty big names at the bottom down here. Corey Kluber is 55. Aaron Nola, 58. I'm not worried at all about him. We'll talk about Chris Sillison later on. But with Greinke, the age thing, he's getting up there in age. He's 35 now. The velocity's just not there. The spin is still there, but the velocity's still not there. And guys aren't hammering him, but he just doesn't quite have the tools he used to have to beat guys consistently. Go into a couple of hitters here. Jung Ho Kang for the Pirates won the third base job out of camp. I was all over him. I snatched him up in an 18-team league. Yes, 18 teams in this league. So you get to the late rounds and it's like, oh my God, who am I drafting? He's been terrible. Can't make contact that well. When he does make contact, he's not really hitting the ball with any sort of authority. If you're still holding on to him in a 12-team or 14-team league or something like that and holding out hope, I would cut him loose, especially because the Pirates have a young third baseman in Ke'Bryan Hayes, who I think he hit another homer tonight in AAA. He's coming. I had actually heard that he almost made the team, the big league team, out of camp. So he's coming along in a hurry, and you go ahead and cut Jung Ho Gong loose. I just don't see anything with, you know, I watch a lot of Pirates games, being a Pirates fan. I don't see anything with the swing that makes me think he's suddenly going to start consistently hitting the ball with authority, getting on base at a high rate and things like that. Because Gong isn't a prospect anymore, but Eloy Jimenez, I was all over him. The projection models loved him. I've never seen the projection models love a minor league player like they love Eloy Jimenez. And these projection models are usually pretty damn good, and they don't get too bullish. You know, a lot of them had Javier Baez hitting like 268 or something like that this year. So they had Eloy Jimenez having a monster year, and it just hasn't happened so far. He is hitting 279, but the numbers show that in actuality, based on his batted ball profile, should be like 222 or 220 or something like that. He hasn't had a single barrel so far this year. That's pretty tough to accomplish for that talented of a player, 45 plate appearances into the season. So I don't cut him loose, because the talent is immense, the opportunity is there. It seems like the White Sox are fully committed to allowing him to try to grow into that position. But it's just been really, really bad. Right? I would definitely keep him on your bench if you can. Keep him on your bench until he really starts to come around a little bit. And you know what? If you think Eloy Jimenez is a cheap value right now, and you've got somebody that's trying to dangle him in your league, that would be the type of player I'd take a chance on, because the talent is huge. You always want to bet on big-time talent that has opportunity. And I don't think there's any way the White Sox, especially after that deal they just gave him, are going to yank him down to AAA all of a sudden if he continues to struggle. And I say struggle, he's, like I said, he's hitting 273. Regardless of what the advanced numbers say, he's still hitting 273. So it's not like this is Chris Davis in the White Sox lineup right now. I hope by now those nerdy fantasy baseball juices are flowing, as we're in episode 37 of the Extra Bases podcast on theact.com, a fantasy baseball only podcast. I hope to do more of these in the future. I'm planning on trying to do one of these a week, just to go through rapid fire with some guys to try to give you some tips and things like that. So let's go to the good group. And I've got mostly pitchers, but a couple hitters in here as well. Tyler Glasnow. As I mentioned, I was a Pirates fan, and I was convinced. I've got this thing about tall guys, especially tall guys with really long limbs and things like that, that they might always struggle to throw strikes, because it's just harder for a guy. You know, he's listed at 6'8". It's hard for those big guys to control their body consistently in the way to command the baseball. Well, credit Tampa Bay for getting him. Austin Meadows, who was the other guy that they got? It was a first-round pick from the Pirates. His name escapes me. He's a pitcher. But he's another guy that can just absolutely throw the shit out of the ball. So credit the Rays for seemingly winning that deal. Although Chris Archer is having the type of season so far I thought he would. If you've drafted Archer, you got to feel pretty good right now. But Tyler Glasnow has just been a freaking monster. And if you don't own him by now, chances are you're not going to be able to own him at any point this year. And I'm telling you, it looks like it's for real. And you're going to have a few games where he's just going to fight his control. And the Rays are probably going to be super aggressive with their bullpen usage, because that's what the Rays do. But everything about his profile right now says that the 0.53 ERA, the 21 strikeouts in 17 innings, and the 0.82 whip are for real. His K percentage is excellent. His expected numbers are all excellent. You know, when guys do make contact on him, they do, you know, the ball jumps off the bat. It's part of the reason is because he throws so incredibly hard. I mean, his average four-seam velocity is 96.4. No, by the way, he has insane extension. So when he's letting go of the baseball, it is closer to home plate than 99% of the other pitchers in Major League Baseball. And he can throw 99 miles an hour with cut. So what the Rays have done basically is just, hey, don't worry about command as much as just throwing strikes. your stuff moves so much. It's so electric. Just focusing on throwing strikes and just challenge guys. And that's what he's doing. And I think it's for real. He's obviously not going to have a sub one ERA all year, but I could totally see a low to mid threes ERA, maybe 10 strikeouts per nine innings, maybe more, in something like a 1.3 whip. Maybe even lower than that, because guys just aren't going to hit him often when he's in the zone. So it looks like Tampa has unlocked him for the meantime. Sonny Gray, and I'll put Sonny Gray and Marcus Stroman together, because if you listen to other Extra Bases podcasts, when I did throw in a little bit of my MLB predictions, I think that was two podcasts ago. I think it was episode 35. Stroman was my AL comeback pitcher of the year, or bounce back pitcher, whatever you want to call it. And then Gray, it was my NL one. And with Gray, it was because he was going somewhere. The Yankees just, I think, really screwed with him with their pitch usage, just kind of made him throw, you know, a slider all the time that just wasn't his pitch. So he was getting back to, you know, Vanderbilt's old pitching coach was there in Cincinnati. So basically he was going to get back to throwing a ton of curveballs again, a ton of curveballs, and I believe cutters as well. And, you know, sure enough, I mean, 27.1% curveballs. He's basically, they have some sliders in this profile. His breaking ball is really weird in that it can kind of look like different things all the time. So he was going to get back to a situation with somebody that knew him better. And the spin rates are really, really good. I think that's something that he's always had, the ability to really spin the baseball. But he's getting back to a more comfortable situation. And this is a guy that's on the road last year was really, really good. But it's getting back into a familiar situation. So he was on his way to totally dominating the Marlins on Thursday before he got hit with a line drive in his ankle. He actually made the play. But then the Reds had a really, really long inning at the plate, and I think he just got stiff, so they ended up holding him out of the game. So Sonny Gray, I think, you know, you worry some about that park. You also worry some about that division is really, really good, although the Pirates can't hit very well. The Cubs can, the Brewers can, the Cardinals can. So there's going to be some tough matchups in there. But I think he's well on his way to a bounce-back year. And then with Stroman, interesting thing with Stroman is he's throwing his slider almost 10% more than he did last year. He was so much of a sinker guy last year, and not as much of a slider. He's actually throwing more sliders right now than he is sinkers. And his slider actually has increased spin rate by about 100 rotations per minute, which is a pretty significant jump, I think. It's generating way more whiffs, almost 10% more whiff percentage, definitely a higher K percentage. He looks like the guy that was putting up really, really good ERA numbers early in his career. And then his K percentage has jumped. I mean, it's jumped basically 7%. And its walk rate has remained the same as what it normally has been in his career. So with the increased slider usage and the tick up in the spin and things like that, I think that this is definitely for real. I took him on every team I could because I thought he was bound to bounce back. I thought he had some bad luck last year. And so far with throwing more sliders than sinkers, it's led to a lot of success and more strikeouts for him. He's often just been a sinker guy that people just want ERA with. Now he's a guy that the whip and the K percentage are going to start ticking up as well because of the slider usage. A couple more pitchers are just Astros pitchers, Wade Miley and Colin McHugh. I mentioned early on with Gerrit Cole and the pitch usage. Well, they're doing it with Wade Miley and Colin McHugh as well. Wade Miley is throwing so many cutters. It's you know, because that's his best pitch. That's what the Astros do. Wade Miley's best pitch is a cutter, so they're increased his cutter usage. Colin McHugh, best pitch is a slider. He threw 94 pitches against the Yankees on Wednesday night. And yeah, sure, Stanton wasn't in the lineup, and they've had Andujar's out and things like that. Still had Aaron Judge. Still, you know, Clint Frazier. They still had some dudes, Luke Voit. They still had some dudes in that lineup, Gleyber Torres. And he was really, really good. And he threw 47 of his 94 pitches were sliders. Sliders. That many sliders. And he got 17 swings and misses on his slider. Like, a good number just overall for a pitcher in a start. Let's say a pitcher throws 100 pitches. If he gets above 10 swings and misses, that's pretty good. If he gets above like 13 or 14, that's really, really good. And McHugh had 14 just on his slider. So the Astros are at it again with Miley and McHugh. And I think that's one of the reasons why they didn't go make a big move for a pitcher in the offseason, is that they felt like they went out and signed Miley for cheap. They felt like they had something there. Another, going back to a younger arm, Max Fried, I mentioned him earlier. The interesting thing with him is scouts were seemingly pretty split on whether he would be a reliever or a starter, just because of the control issue and things like that. But his career numbers have been pretty good. 73 and a third innings in his MLB career, 2.7 ERA, 1.32 WHIP, and 75 strikeouts. So just over a strikeout per inning as a major league pitcher. It's just been the control factor. Well, the control's been a lot better so far this year, and his curveball has always been a monster. I mean, spin, whiff rate, all those things. It is a beautiful left-handed curveball. He's a lot of fun to watch, but he's finding the strike zone more. And so far, he's been really, really good. You know, that Atlanta organization is just loaded with young arms. So it was always going to be a matter of which of these guys stepped up and just pitched his way into their rotation spot with the injuries that they've had. Was it going to be Tuki Toussaint? Was it going to be Max Fried? Was it going to be Bryce Wilson? Was it going to be Kyle Wright? Mike Soroka is back healthy, which, by the way, he looked really, really good in his first AAA start. I would stash him if you can, because he's coming along, and he'll be up there soon. But Fried has been awesome. And not only has he been awesome, he's throwing harder. His average four-seam velocity right now is 94.4 miles per hour. Last year it was 93.1. And keep in mind, some of those innings were out of the bullpen. So that's normally a situation where you kind of let loose a little bit more. And his numbers on his fastball have been really, really good. I mean, guys are just not barreling that thing. And the curveball is obviously a big, big weapon as well. So he's basically just been fastball, curveball guy. He'll throw the changeup a little bit. You know, he's got a cutter and slider in his profile as well, but he's basically a fastball, curveball guy. And both those pitches have been so good right now that I would say if you're contemplating taking a chance on Max Fried, I would take it. Be careful with the division he's in. It's loaded, you know, especially when you're playing, you know, the Phillies and Citizens Bank and things like that. Obviously, you do get to play the Marlins, who are the one of the worst offenses in Major League Baseball. But there can be some tough situations with Fried. But I say go for it, man. I mean, this is a guy with a prospect pedigree. It was always just a matter of, is he going to be a reliever or is he a starter? Is he going to throw strikes or not? So I would go ahead and take a chance on him. Speaking of Braves, I almost forgot. Two hitters, Dansby Swanson from the Braves. This guy was the number one overall pick, and he just hadn't ever put it together. And I don't know. I haven't watched him enough yet or watched enough Braves games. I don't know exactly what's going on, but his numbers are off the charts, and it's not a fluke. His barrel percentage, I mean, how many times he barrels the baseball? 21.4%. That's in the top 3% of Major League Baseball. His exit velocity is 92.3 miles an hour, which is really, really good, and up over 6 miles per hour from last year. His expected slugging is 695. His weighted on base percentage, 465. You know, his on base percentage based on his contact, 528. His hard hit rate is up almost 20% from last year. He's walking way more. He's striking out less. Everything about this profile says this could be the guy the Braves thought that they're going to have when they drafted him number one overall. I mean, everything looks really, really good, and he actually should be. The slugging is 730 overall. So his numbers right now are pretty indicative of his batted ball rate. I mean, you look at the Baseball Savant page in the top right corner, it ranks exit velocity, sprint speed, expected batting average, expected slugging, expected weighted on base percentage, and hard hit percentage. He is in the 90th percentile or better, no, 83rd percentile better for all of those. Think about that for a moment. That's pretty hard to do. So I think that something's happened with him, and I don't know what it is exactly. He's not just launching the ball. All of a sudden, his launch angle is pretty much the same as what it was last season. He's just hammering the baseball. Maybe he's figured something out. And speaking of hammering the baseball, Daniel Vogelbach, he hit another homer today. Hard hit percentage, 97th percentile. Expected weighted on base, 99th percentile. Expected slugging, 98th percentile. This guy, I talked about opportunity earlier. With the case of this guy, it was about opportunity. Because he hammered the ball when he hit last year. He struck out a lot, 25.5% K percentage last year. But he hammered the ball. I mean, his expected slugging was 489. Pretty good barrel rate. Exit velocity was good. Well, they've gotten way better this year. He's striking out less. He's walking more. And he is absolutely mashing the baseball. And I just don't see a way that the Mariners can consistently keep him out of the lineup, even though that everybody on that team is mashing right now. Domingo Santana, Edwin Encarnacion, hell, D. Gordon hit a home run. Malik Smith hit a home run in their home opener. Omar Navarez, their catcher, has been doing some good things. The one guy that hasn't really hit has been Mitch Haniger, which has been kind of weird. And we'll see if he turns it around. But Vogelbach, to me, looks like the real deal. Looks like he is going to get an opportunity. I don't think he's going to hit 400. I don't think he's going to hit 300. But he is going to hit home runs, and he is going to get on base. And it looks like he's got a path to a lot of playing time for that Mariners team. So that's the good group. We'll wrap up this edition of the Extra Bases Podcast, episode 37, with some guys I've got in my interesting profile. And I wish I did not have Chris Sale in this area. As a Red Sox fan, I wish that I had him in the good area and he was on his way to Cy Young or whatever it was he was doing. But yeah, it just has not been good. It just, the batted ball stuff hasn't been good. And I know he's been building himself up. You know, in his last start, he had some bad luck in his last start. He gave up, I think, four hits that all had expected batting averages under 250 for that hit. So he had some bad luck. He was still touching 94 miles an hour. He was reaching back to get to the upper 94 mile an hour range in his final inning. He was building up. I mean, he's kind of still in spring training in terms of building himself up. So I'm not terribly worried yet. I also think this is also more of a command thing than a stuff and velocity thing. Because if you went back and watched his last start in that last inning, he started racking up the swings and misses on a slider. He actually finished with like 10 swings and misses on 75 pitches, which is a good rate, even for Chris Sale. So I think the velocity will come back. He's shown it's there when he reaches back. But I would watch him closely just from the standpoint of, you know, unless he has a very favorable matchup, you might consider maybe sitting him until he finally gets back in that group. I think we're going to get to May and he's going to be absolutely fine. But he definitely falls into my interesting category right now. Freddy Peralta, a guy I really, really like. He's had one start this year where he looked like he was going to throw no hitter and strike out 15 guys and almost did. I think he struck out 12 guys in 8 shutout innings. And his other couple of starts have been up and down. And I'm buying him. He gets really, really good extension. You know, his expected batting average, so basically what players should be hitting based on the type of baseball put in play, how hard it's put in play, where it's put in play, is 196. So his numbers suggest he's had a lot of bad luck. Oh, excuse me, that was last year. It's 222 this year. Still very, very good. Guys are hitting him harder a little bit more. His K rate is basically the same. His walk rate is even lower. So I think what's kind of happening is he's kind of sacrificing to throw strikes. And I think he's paying for that a little bit. From all accounts, he's a really, really smart young man. Everybody raves about his makeup when you read the Brewers talk about him. He's a guy, if you're in a deeper league, like a 12-team or a 14-team league, definitely if you're in an NL-only league, I would buy him because I think that if you can handle the occasional blow-up start where guys hit him out of the yard, and again, the NL Central is pretty tough, you're going to get some gold. You're going to get a sub – I'm pretty confident you're going to get a sub-4 ERA. You're going to get over 9 strikeouts per 9 innings. The whip could be interesting, but I look at the guy pitch, how much he misses bats, things like that. His velocity is up this year, up almost 2 miles per hour. And the spin rate is basically the same. The K rate and things like that, the whiff rates are basically the same. His whiff rate on his curve is actually up this year. So that would be, to me, a guy that I would keep a close eye on and maybe potentially be a buyer on. Just because the profile says that he should not have a 5.91 ERA. And we've seen when he's right, he's totally dominant. So, and I think that the Brewers are going to stick with him. You know, Jimmy Nelson's going to be coming back. I could see them maybe going with a six-man rotation early on, you know, just to see how it works out. But I think the Brewers are going to stick with him. Another guy I love, I've got the Franimal written down. Franimal Reyes. Immense power. Immense power. And if you look at his batted ball profile, all of the things, exit velocity, all the expected numbers rate really, really high. And yet he entered tonight hitting 143. And I think, I say tonight, this was recorded on Thursday. You're probably listening to it on Friday morning. I think he hit a homer tonight or did something. But his expected slugging is 703 and his weighted on base is 440. And yet right now he's hitting 143 with a 235 on base percentage. He is going to hit. I know Petco is not a great hitter's park. I know when they play the Giants, it's not a great hitter's park. But he's going to get some games at Coors. He's going to get some games at Chavez Ravine and things like that. So I think that once he gets going, he's going to be a close to an everyday guy. And he's going to mash the ball so much that he's going to hit some bombs. And his K rate is down. His walk rate is up. This, to me, says bye, bye, bye. On Franmil Reyes. And I talked about opportunity early on. Christian Walker with the Diamondbacks. I mentioned him. He's been hammering the baseball. I think he's got a definite path to playing time now with the way that the Diamondbacks are kind of banged up. And Clint Frazier right now has a path to playing time. He's got some of the best bat speed you're ever going to see, especially from a young player. And he kind of burst onto the scene when he jumped in the lineup when Giancarlo Stanton got hurt. Aaron Hicks has been hurt as well. He's got three homers and 31 plate appearances so far. The talent is definitely there. I do wonder once Stanton comes back and eventually when Hicks gets healthy, how that all works in the outfield. They got Brett Gardner as well. They got a lot of outfielders. Maybe Frazier ends up being an ideal. It's funny, the Indians drafted him and traded him to the Yankees for Andrew Miller. And now the Indians are in desperate need of an outfielder. Maybe the Yankees sent Clint Frazier back to the Indians for some sort of deal. But in the meantime, he's got the talent. He's got the opportunity right now. I would snag him if you're in a deeper league, 12-team plus, definitely in an AL-only league. I grabbed him in a 12-team dynasty league. Take a chance on the talent because he could hit so well that he just forces the Yankees' hand and they've got to keep him in the lineup because Brett Gardner has kind of been on the decline. You know, who knows when Hicks is going to come back. You know, and then they could choose to do some things with that DH position to get creative. So with that, I have rambled on enough on this Extra Bases podcast, episode 37. This is our first very diehard fantasy baseball only podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. And please, if you have any questions, feel free to contact me on Twitter at DMCOMASOB on Twitter, DMCCOMASOB on Twitter. I love talking fantasy baseball with people. It's just like I feel like I have to kind of like bring people out of the woodwork to talk about it because it's not as popular as fantasy football, even though it's the OG of a fantasy sport. So if you've got any questions, please don't hesitate at all to reach out on Twitter. I hope you enjoyed this. I hope some of these guys were already on your radar and you're kind of nodding your head and saying, yeah, man, I agree with you. If not, maybe there's some guys you can go snag on the waiver wire and go take a chance on. But really, just go back to the numbers. You know, if you're in a 10-team league, obviously things are a little easier to find a bunch of guys on the waivers. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to help you. Once you get to the 12 teams and beyond, you can really make an impact by what you do on the waiver wire. So go look at how much players are owned. Go look at those statistics. You know, go look on places like RotoGraphs and things like that to see what other people are saying. I look at some projection tools and things like that. But really, don't be afraid to be aggressive. I think that that's part of the fun is you get a hunch on a guy and you grab him early on and he turns out to be a stud. It can really boost you into a situation where you're going to make some money at the end of the year. And I don't think there's any better feeling as a fantasy baseball player when you either nail, you know, a guy that you took early in the draft or you nail a waiver wire ad and it really changes your season. So let's wrap this bad boy up. I hope that you have a great weekend. I hope that your fantasy baseball seasons are going well so far. And if they're not, don't worry. There's plenty of time. You can really turn this thing around pretty quickly. And obviously with the roto style leagues, you just got to be patient. You just got to stick with it because Not everybody gets off to great starts, and some of these guys that get off to great starts are going to fall back down to earth very soon. So thank you for listening. Get to theact.com. Check out all our great podcast content. And please go to the Apple App Store on your phone or on your laptop. And if you haven't, download the Yak app. I'm telling you, it's a game changer. It's going to make your podcasting experience more enjoyable. And it's so easy to use. It looks really slick. The guys did a great job designing it. So go to the Apple App Store, download the Yak app. And that way you can stream your podcast even easier on your phone. I don't know if you're like me, but I like going on long walks on the beach. No, not long walks on the beach. Just walking around my neighborhood and things like that and listening to my favorite podcasts. I listen to a lot of fancy baseball podcasts. So the Yak app is great for that. It makes that really easy. So go there, download the Yak app. And until next time, have a great weekend and take care.